afternoon or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of August 21st, 2016. I'm Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor for Technical Content at Information Week, and your host for this episode of Information Week Live. We've got a great, great show for you today because we have, well, it's a guest who is always welcomed here at Information Week Live, but because she is so busy doing other things, we rarely get to have her on. We're pleased to have Susan Nunziata, who is Editorial Director at Information Week, on the panel this week. Susan, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thank you, Kurt. It's great to be back on the air with you. It's been a while.
It has been, and I know that you've been involved in a lot of the things that are going on sort of behind the scenes at Information Week. We're going to talk about those a little bit later on because I think there are some things that, the Information Week Live audience is going to be interested to know. But I wanted first to just talk a little bit about what's been going on in the world of enterprise tech this week. You are in that rare position. You actually look at everything that happens at Information Week. Have any of the stories jumped out at you this week as being particularly big or particularly important?
Well, I think that it's, for me, less about the types of news that is breaking because, you know, each week we're seeing a new hack or a new way to violate some organization's security profile. And so that is always something that's of interest. But I think one of the areas that we're starting to focus on a little bit more closely is what's happening within the IT department and what kind of guidance we can offer to folks working in IT that relates to their day-to-day jobs. And so we're looking at things like, you know, we have a new podcast just posted today, speaking with the CTO of EMC, talking about the state of enterprise big data. And we have a piece on the five traits that effective IT leaders need. And I think we're looking at both the technology and the human sides of IT beyond just the basic news headlines.
Well, it's some interesting stuff. We're going to talk more about that. I want to let our listeners know that it's not that Susan is coming to us from the local animal shelter. She's got some construction going on near her house, and her puppies are taking notice of that. Either that or they just want everyone to know that today is National Dog Day, a wonderful holiday that more people should celebrate. It's interesting. This is one of those far-flung episodes of Information Week Live because, as it turns out, I'm in a hotel room coming to you while looking into the mirror that is way too close to the edge of the desk here that I'm sitting at in a hotel room. But that's just the kind of thing that we do at Information Week that is similar to what you're doing. We know talking to the executives and managers out there that in many, many businesses, IT today is all about keeping the mobile workforce connected to the enterprise. And we live that story here at Information Week. Thanks for living it with us. Susan, I want to get to you. And you were talking about these aspects of the modern IT department. It sounds like what you're seeing is changes that go way beyond just the technology. Am I right there, or is all of this feeding off of technology somehow?
Well, a little bit of both, I would have to say. So we did a survey earlier this year of 100 top companies across the spectrum. So not tech companies, but companies in every vertical, higher ed, government, and corporate. And we asked respondents what their biggest mistakes had been in the last 12 months. And a vast majority The answers were write-in, so they're anonymized, but it's a little mini survey. So it really does bring out the pain that folks are experiencing in IT. And I would say 50-50, it was probably human leadership, culture, challenges with the business, and the other half was related to technology challenges or problems trusting vendors who failed to deliver or things like that, putting too much faith in a piece of technology to solve all your problems. So it's an interesting mix, but I would say among the mistakes that we're seeing on the human side of IT, it all revolves around talent and staffing, communicating with the business, change management challenges, and oftentimes waiting too long to do something. That was an underlying mistake and regret that I saw repeated again and again. We waited too long to implement product X, or we waited too long to train people on how to use product Y, or just waiting too long to even make a decision about whether to move forward with a certain technology or change in process. So, you know, I think it was interesting to me, the regret that folks had in waiting too long. There were very few people who said we moved too quickly on something. There were a handful, but many more people said they felt they waited too long to do something or to take action.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about the waiting too long. I have heard that myself in talking to executives, and it's interesting when I talk to them to try and figure out why they waited. I mean, was this something where it is the conservative nature of IT in a large enterprise that made them wait too long? Or was the IT department ready to make the move and the executive committee was holding them back, either because of budget or because of executives from other business units not understanding why they would want to make the change to the new technology? I don't know that we asked that question, but in talking with executives, do you get any sense about which of those plays a larger role, or do you think it just varies from organization to organization?
I think a lot of it has to do with your own internal organizational culture. The respondents to our survey mostly talked about their own IT organizations moving too slowly, or their own internal IT processes slowing them down, as opposed to external forces that were holding them back. I think I have talked to people who have more challenge with getting executive buy-in and being blocked by business issues. But in the case of how people responded to this survey, it was very much about, you know, what we're doing internally and how we're slowing ourselves down more than it was, you know, being slowed down by external forces.
You know, when you talk about those external forces, you mentioned that there are a lot of these departments, a lot of these IT managers who are worried about being able to get the talent they need to make the changes they want to make. And I've been fascinated by a couple of things that seem almost to be tugging in different directions. Because on the one hand, I've seen a number of surveys that indicate that IT departments are more willing to hire people who don't have computer science degrees. You know, they want to see a portfolio. They want to see that they've taken various coding classes, things like that. On the other hand, when I talk to people, especially in areas like IoT, they talk about the danger of hiring people who don't have the formal training. And it's interesting to see these two very different directions tugging at IT managers. It feels like in many cases, they're not sure which of those should be stronger when they're looking to fill the needs that they have for talent in their own development.
I think that's absolutely true, and that is something that we see in the survey results as well. For example, one organization was challenged to deal with weaknesses in the supply chain process. And what they realized was, they spent a whole lot of time thinking about a new software solution that could fix the problem. But what they failed to see was that they had an understaffed department already, and the skill sets that they had were not aligned to the roles and resources and tasks that the new software solution was going to require. So they had a complete disconnect between the software they were looking to implement and the skills of the people who were working in the IT organization who were going to be charged with implementing it. So, that's, I think, a process and a give and take and a tension that we're seeing a lot right now that is likely to continue for some years as the entire structure of the IT organization continues to undergo change.
And one of the things that I've seen, I think it's amazing to watch when I was young, when I was going through university, the emphasis was on the specialist. You wanted to go in and specialize on a particular area, a particular type of programming, a particular set of language skills, but specialize and really drill down. I've heard a lot of IT managers tell me that they believe that, especially with the rise of cloud computing and so many more applications being integrated rather than written from scratch, that the IT generalist is seeing a great increase in desirability. Have you heard anything like that, or do you get a sense from the executives the kind of skills and talents that they're looking for?
Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right. First of all, the generalist is having a bit of a resurgence right now. And I think that's part and parcel of the types of technologies that that are being implemented. They need less care and feeding, theoretically, in the same way that, you might have had to do with some legacy hardware or software in, 10 years ago or 12 years ago, or even 15 years ago. So I think, you're seeing that changing what organizations are looking for. I also think it's a cyclical thing. I think it's always difficult to anticipate what the skill sets are going to be in the next 5 or 10 years versus what people are looking for now. And I think certain things come into vogue and then, the business decides it's gone too far one direction and needs to go back the other way. So I think as new technologies come forward, like machine learning and artificial intelligence and IoT, we're going to see new specialties that we may not be thinking about just yet that are going to suddenly become important again. And so I think, it's difficult to anticipate what those will be. For those who are looking to remain viable in today's IT market, I think you can't go wrong right now with stepping up your cybersecurity certifications. Just getting a better handle on what's happening in the security landscape and the threat landscape will improve your value to the organization. And then I think, just developing those people traits, developing the traits that will make you stand out from folks with the same kind of skill sets, but who might not be able to bring together, say, a business and a technology person at the same table and be able to speak to both of them in, equally authoritative ways.
It's funny that you mentioned getting your certificate in cybersecurity. As I was looking through the articles that we've had at Information Week this week, it seems like we've had quite a few that either came from our sister publication over at Dark Reading, where they specialize in security issues, or even those from our own writers. The number of things that have words like hacker and security and CISO in them, this is a huge area of concern, and I'm not seeing anything in the news that indicates that it's slowing down. It seems like we have that wave of new attacks, new vulnerabilities, and evidence of successful attacks being presented, whether it's credit card information or political information. There just seems to be a lot of intrusion into other people's systems going on these days. Do you think I'm overreacting to a few headlines, or is that something you're seeing too?
It certainly seems like it. I think it's also just part of it is that media, mainstream news media, is paying more attention to these things. But the targets are big, and there's no doubt that the political climate is lending itself to a lot of chatter. Anytime you have a presidential election year, I think in the U.S. you're going to see a lot of activity. But even things like the Rio Olympics open up opportunities for folks who want to do wrong. So, you know, I just think it's the time of year where there's just a lot happening and a lot of public discourse that is very heated. And that just lends itself to activity and coverage of hacker activity in a way that you might not see in a normal news cycle. So I think, you know, the media has something to do with it in terms of suddenly jumping on every problem where maybe in the past it might not have been such big news. And oddly enough, I think the new TV series Mr. Robot is raising awareness among the mainstream folks about what is really happening behind the scenes in the security landscape, in the hacktivist world. And, you know, I've seen different interviews where people have discussed the show on its merits, you know, if it's realistic or not. And there's, you know, debates going back and forth both ways. But I think the show has developed a following and is now kind of raising the awareness in a pop culture sense of the hacker environment, the hacktivist environment, and, you know, just how all of these things are shaping our world. So it's kind of interesting to see it from a pop culture phenomenon.
Yeah, you talk about the hacktivists, and certainly one of the most famous, if not hacktivists, at least users of hacktivist information is Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. Mm. I thought it was interesting they have recently come under some criticism because they seem to be much more comfortable releasing private information on people who aren't public figures. And I think that, you know, may be an interesting shift in what's going on there. It seems like we go through, as we've talked about these waves several times in this episode, but stages where on the one hand there are rules even among hackers and hacktivists, and then there's a phase where those rules, the boundaries are pushed back. And it seems like we definitely are in one of those phases where the rules of hacking are being pushed out. And I'm not at all sure that's a good thing. This seems like the slimiest of slippery slopes to me, but then again, it's possible that I'm just old.
Well, you know, I think it's a little bit of old school concept of what privacy even means anymore. And I am not a proponent of this worldview, so let me say that. However, there are people who believe that there is no such thing as privacy anymore and that all information is available to the public and should be available, you know, and it's, you know, we come from a tradition as journalists of protecting sort of the private individual. You know, you're not looking to expose the working stiff who's just trying to do their job. You're looking to bring light to public figures who are influencing the fate of our nation, for example. But I don't think what you're seeing is necessarily new. One of the things that bothered me so much back when Sony was hacked is that, you know, all the chatter and news coverage was about these emails that, you know, the president of Sony had sent out with terrible things about artists and actors and, you know, dissing folks. But what was buried was the fact that the personal information of, I think, I forget the number now, but, you know, potentially thousands of Sony employees, the regular Joes who were just going to work every day, was also exposed. And so I think that kind of gets glossed over in the frenzy of coverage about the salient stuff. It's not new. You know, unfortunately, the Office of Personnel Management hack was the same kind of thing. You know, you had personal information on people who were just working stiff, you know, kind of thrown out there into the ether for anyone to get hold of. So, yeah, I don't like it one bit, but I don't know that it's necessarily new. I think it's been going on for a while.
Well, I think one of the questions that I have looking at what we're having, do you think that the upcoming holiday season with all of the...
I'm having a little bit of a technical difficulty, Kurt, so I've lost our feed, and I'm not sure. I hope that the audience is still hearing you. Well, I think the direction you were going was in what's going on with the holiday season and what might be happening, what we might have to look forward to. I would say that probably more likely we'll see more activity around the election season even than what might happen during the upcoming holidays. I think that's going to be where we're going to see a lot of uptick in what's going on with hacking and cybersecurity threats and things along those lines, since there's so much chatter right now about the election campaign and the cycles and things like that. And I think the U.S. Unfortunately influences a lot of what gets discussed worldwide and a lot of actions taken worldwide.
I apologize for that. Susan, are you still on the line?
I am indeed, and I'm not sure what did or did not get broadcast there, but I hope I was able to fill the air for a bit at least for folks. I think you were talking about the holidays and potential increase in activity, and I did talk a bit about that, Kurt, so I'm not sure if you were able to hear it, but there we have it. So sorry for the technical difficulty there, but I'm glad you're back.
Well, I am back, and I appreciate you doing that. Just for our listeners, this is one of those cases I had mentioned earlier that I was calling in from a hotel room, and the network here at the hotel decided that it was time for me to reauthenticate, and so it booted me off the network, and I had to reauthenticate before I could get back in, and so I appreciate you filling in there, and I appreciate our audience being patient with me. This is one of those things that goes along with traveling around a bit. Life is always entertaining when you're a mobile professional these days. So quickly, I've got to ask, since I didn't hear any of it, do you think it's going to be a holiday season of breaches, or do you think it's going to be a fairly safe shopping season here at the end of the year?
I was saying, and sorry for the folks if you're hearing me say this again, but in case we did have a total connection fail, my theory is that, you know, the election season is going to be more of an issue than the holidays themselves, you know, the holiday shopping season. I think that organizations are doing everything they can to harden their security profile in anticipation of increases in online shopping and those sorts of things. Where I think it's going to get interesting is what kind of activity we see around continuing around the upcoming U.S. presidential election.
Well, I think that the election is going to be exciting in, you know, pretty much every dimension. So I'm looking forward to, you know, actually making it to the first Wednesday in November, because that means that the political ads will at least slow down for a while. I do find it interesting. I was listening to an interview today, and to get back to Julian Assange, that he anticipates releases that he says will have an impact on the U.S. election. We're in many ways in uncharted territory where we have these external actors who can have such a significant impact on what happens in our political lives and in our commercial lives. It's life in the 21st century, I suppose.
Yeah, fun times indeed, and certainly a change and a significant shift in the way that information gets shared and disseminated. And I think there is no turning back to a kinder, gentler era for sure. You know, we're going to see this continue, and the ability for information to be unleashed into the wild is only going to grow. There's no doubt about it.
I think the days of taking our messages down to the friendly telegraph operator or turning the crank on the phone to get the operator to come on and tell us where we should route our call to find our spouse in town, those days are long gone. Well, the universe changes, society changes, and we change as well. Here at Information Week, one of the changes that I wanted to let everybody know about is a new set of podcasts that we're doing. Now, this is not live radio shows, but podcasts. They are called Information Week Expert Voice. There have been two of them so far. And it's where the editors of Information Week talk with various executives, managers, practitioners, consultants about topics that are critical for IT practitioners. And I'm really excited about these. We've had one where our editor-at-large, Tom Claiborne, interviewed a security specialist from Nuix. And the one that we released today was Information Week senior editor, Jessica Davis, who was talking with the CTO at EMC. And I'm excited about these. I'm curious, Susan, now that I've teed it up and said that I'm really excited about it, is this something that you expect Information Week to be doing more of, bringing these user stories and the voice of experts to readers in different ways?
Absolutely, yes. The podcasts are an important new direction for us, Kurt, and we're excited to have you kind of leading the charge for that, actually. This is the fruition of a lot of hard work on your part over the past year to make these happen. So we're very excited to be launching those. And I think we're also going to be focusing more on some video content that's along similar lines, talking to IT practitioners and IT leaders within the vendor community about some of the challenges and problems and how to solve some of the problems that IT professionals face in the workplace. And then, of course, our usual array, we're introducing some new infographic features. We'll continue to do case studies and slideshows, all with an eye toward helping IT practitioners do their jobs better.
And so that's our focus. And the podcasts are a really important part of that in terms of communicating and relaying some of those stories. I think the real goal here is to present the human side of IT, right? And how we are all working to facilitate change in our organizations and what that really means when the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that getting the practitioners together, it goes back to something that we've talked about. I know that Susan, you and I have been working together for a number of years, and community has been an important aspect of the work we've done both at Information Week and earlier at a publication called Enterprise Efficiency. And in some ways, community is important here as well. We're going to be telling the stories of the community. I know I'm reaching out a little bit more through social media to the community. And then in the spring, we'll have a chance to bring the community together in real life at Interop. And to me, it all ties together really, really nicely. And I hope that our readers will find that's true as well. I'm looking forward to hearing about, you know, what they think. And I think that we all are looking forward to getting that feedback from our readers and listeners.
Absolutely. And I welcome feedback, actually. Anyone listening is welcome to follow me on Twitter at Susan Nunziata, all one word. You can reach me there or via our normal email system, susan.nunziata@ubm.com. I definitely welcome feedback, so looking forward to hearing from the community.
Well, I know that they're going to let you hear. And if our listeners have any comments on our podcasts, on our radio shows, I would love to hear that. They can catch me on Twitter at KG4GWA, and my email follows the pattern of pretty much everyone at the company. It's curtis.franklin@ubm.com. But let us know, because we want to make this as powerful and useful for you as we can. Well, Susan, I've got to ask, is anything coming up in the slightly shortened week ahead? I think a lot of people are going to be hitting the door early next Friday ahead of the Labor Day weekend. But anything special we should keep our eyes open for at Information Week?
Well, we have an interesting guest post from a CEO about why he did away with non-compete clauses in his contracts when hiring IT professionals and others to his company. And I think, you know, non-compete clauses are a bit of a bugaboo for anyone working in tech these days. So I think that would be of interest to a lot of folks in our community. And we're going to be rolling out a bunch of user stories next week. Kurt, you did a piece on the Bergen County Sheriff, which will be going live next week and will be a lot of fun to read. And we have a couple of others in the hopper as well. So we're really embracing these user stories in a big way next week. And I think folks can look forward to reading some firsthand experiences from the IT practitioners out there.
I really am looking forward to these. Now, I've got, as you said, Bergen County Sheriffs. I've also got a couple of other case studies that I'm looking forward to bringing forward. One is a museum that is using digital information and additive printing to bring the wonders of the ancient world to life. Another is a market research firm that managed to use low-code programming options to make things happen. So lots of good user stories out there. Now, if you are used to getting your dose of Information Week Live every Friday at 3 p.m., we're pleased, but next Friday we will not have an episode of Information Week Live because, as we say, lots of folks will be heading off early in the day. So join us again in 2 weeks when we will bring you 2 weeks worth of news and excitement here at Information Week Live. Well, we want to thank our very special guest, Information Week's editorial director, Susan Nunziata, for being with us. Susan, thank you so much for taking time from a busy day to be part of Information Week Live.
Oh, you're most welcome, Kurt. My pleasure. Glad to do it.
Thanks to all of you for listening. For Susan and everyone here at Information Week, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you in 2 weeks.